If you tried to design a freeway in which some superior authority told you where to start and where to go and exactly how, when to speed up and when to slow down and all of that, you'd have nothing but traffic accidents. I'm Stephen Cox. I'm professor of literature at UC San Diego, and I'm also the director of the humanities program at Ravel College at UC San Diego. I'm editor of Liberty Magazine, which for the past few months has been an online publication, although for 23 years before then we were a print publication. My literary interests have a lot to do with what individual people can create as they face literary, political, economic problems. I'm interested in following individuals as they go from page to page, exploiting their material as fully as they can in their own way. It was exciting to me in the 1990s to do research on Isabel Patterson, who was a great libertarian figure and also a substantial novelist and a very important literary critic in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. In my biography of Isabel Patterson, which is called The Woman and the Dynamo, Isabel Patterson and the Idea of America, my libertarian interests and my literary interests really came together. I think of Patterson as the person who first put together the little constellation of ideas that we think of as libertarian. Well, her major work about economics and politics is The God of the Machine, published in 1943. And that's an exposition of how capitalism works and why it should be allowed to work, its relations with individual freedom and rights and a broad spectrum. And it offers a very individual idea of how history works. She is what you could call a supporter of minimal government. She is not an anarchist. She believes in a minimal state. And I think most libertarians do believe in a minimal state. And she devotes a lot of time to how minimal the state ought to be. My book, The Big House, Image and Reality of the American Prison, started with my experience as a boy growing up 7 miles north of what was then the largest walled prison in the world, as it advertised itself proudly. The study of prisons can give you wonderful insights into human life. It really shows you something about what institutions are. And one of the insights that libertarians can take home about that is that when you study prisons, you see how very hard it is to boss people around successfully over a long period of time and to just get things to run according to your own views, because they have ways of resisting that you just cannot comprehend. The planned society, prisons in the 1920s and 30s especially were justified specifically as planned welfare states. Their propaganda often referred to them as the ultimate welfare state. So here's the ultimate welfare state, and how well does it run? Almost always it runs in an embarrassingly inefficient, ineffective, bad way, according to anyone's sense of values, because it's just that hard to plan people's lives and to run them, even on the level of a prison which may have 3,000 or 4,000 men in it, to plan their lives and to make sure that just on a minimal level they do what you want to have them do, almost impossible. Our society is very largely a spontaneous order. Well, you see this, for instance, when you're driving down the freeway. Now, despite the fact that you realize there may be an accident, something may go wrong, it almost never does, even though there are plenty of idiots and morons out there driving on in the same road with you, and you are often distracted and they're distracted, still, you find a spontaneous order. There are a certain number of rules but they don't determine where you have to drive. They don't determine, you know, any details at all. You almost always get to your destination, and so do the other people in society, because you know spontaneously how to work with other people. If you tried to design a freeway in which some superior authority told you where to start and where to go and exactly how, when to speed up and when to slow down and all of that, you'd have nothing but traffic accidents. And prisons are almost always nothing but traffic accidents. Well, Liberty Magazine was founded by R.W. Bradford, Bill Bradford, and his idea of Liberty Magazine was that it would be a magazine for libertarians, not an outreach magazine that was trying to convert people to a political orientation. But it was a place for libertarians to get together, to debate issues, to address problems that might not occur to anyone except libertarians, and generally to meet one another so that you would have people from all sorts of fields that weren't limited by specialized interest. We've always had a lot of college professors writing for Liberty Magazine, but it hasn't been a specialized magazine for college professors. On the other hand, it's never been a magazine that was anything other than an intellectual magazine. So it's not something you say, well, read Liberty Magazine, this will show you about libertarianism. Well, it'll show you something about libertarianism, but we've always tried to present the best writing that we could find by libertarians or about any issue that had, or any subject that had anything to do with personal freedom. Well, that's a lot. So you could probably write on almost any subject and find a place in Liberty Magazine. And Liberty continued as a print journal until, well, just 6 months ago, until December 2010, when we decided that we would join the online revolution and reach out to people who get their news and opinions and have the opportunity to review other people's opinions online rather than in print. It's quite a wrenching transformation for us, from Liberty Magazine on the stands to libertyunbound.com, where you can go to find usually daily postings of articles. It's hard to define exactly what we are. We want good writing from individuals, and we are a libertarian magazine. But what people do with it, whether they take it to the polls with them and vote according to the recommendations of our authors, well, that's another matter. I think there are plenty of reasons to be optimistic about the future. For one thing, I don't believe you get any place in life in any way unless you're optimistic. If you assume things are going to work out badly, well, then you're just helping them to work out badly. Human history is not predictable because it's what results from individual choices. And if there's anything true about libertarian ideas about economics, that's what it is, that you can't plan a society and you can't plan a future. We'll see what happens. But I think it's the job of libertarians to enable people to understand that they can make better choices economically, socially, politically, if they think about making them themselves rather than referring them to a government agency. That will give them more grounds of optimism about the future of the country and their own future. Now, we know that we have structural problems that are not likely to go away immediately. Government spends so much of people's resources and is so used to doing that, and so many people are employed doing that and have an interest in maintaining the status quo. It's going to be very difficult to reduce the size of government. And yet we see that the size of government has been reduced in American history in many dramatic and many important, though smaller ways. And, we don't give up. If you want individual freedom, you look to find what you can do about it. Maybe you can promote individual freedom in a small way in your neighborhood. Maybe you can be an important spokesman for some national issue. Or maybe you can just vote for somebody who favors smaller government. Well, try it. It works.